This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Learn more about PASA's 2021 virtual conference at pasafarming.org/conference.
This week on Meat and Three, it's our 100th episode. We're breaking the mold to kick off our mini-series on global trade.
Vegetable, fruits, grains, and cooking technique pass from one region to another. And that's interesting that that region transformed that ingredient into their own specialties.
There was a time where black pepper was a luxury. And we know that because people were willing to invest huge amounts of money to go to the Spice Islands in order to get pepper, you know, stuff we take for granted now. You know, you go into a restaurant and it's free.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Sachiko Nakamichi, the co-owner of Beniya Mukayu in Kaga City, Ishikawa Prefecture. Beniya Mukayu is a beautiful boutique hotel. We'll discuss hotel or ryokan later. It's located in the famous hot spring area, Yamashiro. There are many hotels in the area, but Mukayu is truly distinctive. It has earned multiple accolades, including the member status of Lurei Chateau. And if you're a member of Lurei Chateau, it means that you are the best of the best in the world of hospitality. So, not only that, Mukayu was awarded the Welcome Trophy by Lurei Chateau for its outstanding level of service. But the success did not happen overnight. When Sachiko joined the hotel in 1988, it was a mediocre, mass-market-oriented place to stay. So today, we'll discuss why Sachiko got involved in the hotel business, how she miraculously transformed the unremarkable hotel to the world-class house of hospitality, the concept of the Japanese-style hospitality omotenashi, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you use, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now let's start our conversation with Sachiko Nakamichi. Hello, Sachiko. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
So, great. So first of all, I heard that you were born and raised in Kanazawa, that is the capital of Ishikawa Prefecture. And your hotel, Beniya Mukayu, is in Ishikawa Prefecture too. So what is unique about Ishikawa and more specifically the Yamashiro Onsen area where Mukayu is located?
Ishikawa Prefecture is located at the center of Japan, facing the Sea of Japan. The main city is Kanazawa, which is one of the most popular destinations in Japan for its long history and rich culture. Kanazawa is especially famous for Kanazawa Castle and Kenroken Garden, which is one of the three most beautiful gardens in Japan. Our town, Yamashiro Onsen Hot Spring, is located in the countryside in Kaga, about 1 hour drive from Kanazawa. The hot spring in our town has 1,300 years of history.
Wow.
Very long. After visiting Kanazawa, you can relax in the nature, soak in hot spring bath, and enjoy fine Japanese kaiseki dinner and breakfast in our ryokan, Beniya Mukayu. And in Yamashiro town, you can explore local culture such as kutaniyaki porcelain or yamanakadori lacquerware and so on. It takes 3 hours from Tokyo by Shinkansen. and 2 hours from Kyoto by express train to come here. So it's an ideal place to stay and relax for a few days while traveling between two big cities, Tokyo and Kyoto.
Wow. So, I mean, 3 hours by Shinkansen from Tokyo, that means that Shinkansen to me is another luxury trip. So you have to bring some bento and maybe cup sake, and your travel begins and you get to Yamashiro Onsen area. So sounds like a dream trip. So you joined Benihana Mukayu in 1988. And what was your career before that?
I was born and raised in Kanazawa, and before joining Benihana Mukayu, I used to be an elementary school teacher. My father was a high school teacher, and my mother was an elementary school teacher when she was young. Some of their students visited our home even after graduation. I remember especially one student, Minato-san, who was about 10 years older than me. He took me and my sister to the mountain for skiing or climbing several times when we were kids. We called him Oni-chan, which means big brother. The relationship between teacher and students seemed very nice to me, so I decided to become a teacher like my parents. I majored in children literature at the Faculty of Education at Kanazawa University. When I was a teacher, I taught Japanese language, math, science, sociology, music, arts, and physical education, such as running, swimming, football, baseball, and so on. In particular, I loved reading beautiful poems or fairy tales like Gonizune by Nimi Nankichi with the children.
Right. Wow, Gonizune. That's like if you're a Japanese kid, you know that tale. Right. So, wow. So it sounds like I'm sure your father must have been really a great teacher. And your current career in hospitality seems to have a lot to do with kids' education, because you have to meet multiple unpredictable demands of children, and you're so happy to work on those demands. So sounds like you had a destiny to become in this business. So how did you get involved in the hotel business?
My husband's family owned and ran the Benia Eirak Ryokan. Our original plan was that I'd keep on teaching also after getting married. However, sometime before the wedding, my husband Kazunari suddenly told me that the business of Benia Eirak Ryokan was in a very difficult situation. So he needed me to quit teaching and help with the recovery of the family business. Kazunari and I got married in September 1987. Then 6 months later, I quit teaching and got involved managing the ryokan. That was March 1988.
Wow, that was Kazunari-san's great tactic. And it turned out to be great for all of us to see such a great hotel now. Yeah, so I heard that the hotel was struggling to survive when you joined the business. So what was the hotel like back then, and what was the first step you took to change the situation?
Back in 1988, 33 years ago, there were 50 rooms, many more compared to the 16 rooms that we have now. Many rooms in the main building were old and shabby. Some of them did not have baths and toilet. Most of the guests were coming with bus tour groups. The room price was very low, and the quality of the facilities and the services was very poor. It was a vicious circle, no profit, no new investment, guests were not satisfied. And the ryokan was about to bankrupt because of the debt. The bank was no longer willing to lend us any money, not even a small amount. The first step I took was to try to improve the quality of the cuisine little by little. At the same time, we kept making constant efforts which didn't cost money. For example, I put simple flowers in the rooms. Kazunari and I personally welcomed and said farewell to the guests as often as we could. By doing things like that, we raised the quality step by step and the satisfaction of the guests too. This allowed us to increase the room rate little by little to pay our debts and to make a very small profit year by year.
Right. So it's about small steps. And then this is a new year, 2021, January. So everyone's talking about new habits and small steps. So sounds like it always works. Okay. And then I heard that you renovated the hotel next. So what changes did you make?
Yes, using the small profit that we made in the first 5 years, the next step has been to build an open-air hot spring bath in September 1993. We actually renovated the old communal bath and added a new open-air bath called Komorebi no Yu Hot Spring. Komorebi means the sunlight coming through the leaves of trees, or the interplay of light and shadow. I thought this name would be able to tell the story of the future ryokan I had in my mind. I wanted to change the main target from large group to individual guests, such as couples or families. So following that, I changed the name of the ryokan from Benya Eiraku to Komorebi no Yu Benya. The new name suggested the idea of hot spring resort in harmony with nature. At that time, Japan was still in the era of group banquet guests. Gorgeous, large ryokans flourished, especially in our region. So the new name indicated a new, very fresh approach, unlike any other ryokans or hotels in this area. Also, the new open-air bath was surrounded by the forest garden, which perfectly matched the image of Komorebi. Komorebi no Yu Hot Spring became a hot topic, and the picture was featured on the cover of a pamphlet of a major travel agency. The new communal bath and the new name made my idea visible and easy to understand to others. They gave a clear picture and the direction I wanted to go.
Now, if you see, if listeners see Mukayu's website and everything, it sounds easy to get here, but back then you didn't have almost nothing and anything. So then your vision is just amazing, right? You had a clear picture of the direction you wanted to go. And that was even visual, that Komorebi hot spring and the nature and the sun. It's just amazing. That's very impressive how visionary you are. So So I heard that you stopped accepting large groups in 1996 and began to focus on individual guests who look for high-quality experience. So how did you make the shift? It must be very hard to cultivate a new client base.
Oh, that's right, Akiko-san. The years from 1993 to 96 were very hard for us. Komorebi no Yu Hot Spring was very popular and we tried to attract individual guests, but on the other hand, the rest of the facilities were the same as before, and we had to continue taking large groups to Amani. It was really hard. However, after creating the new Komorebi no Yu Hot Spring in 1993, we could close some of the lowest grade old guest rooms. In 1996, we opened a new lobby and four new guest rooms. We could not build many more new rooms because we had to return the loan to the bank. But this allowed us to close some more low grade guest rooms. And then the Destiny closed a few more rooms. In fact, in October 1998, an accident happened in the old main building. Suddenly, the old water pipe burst and all the rooms from the fifth floor to the ground floor were flooded with water. As a result, we closed the old main building, so we had a total of 20 rooms, including the new hall rooms. Anyway, thanks to Komorebi no Yu Hot Spring, the new lobby and the new rooms, people felt that this ryokan was a nice place for the individual guests. That allowed us to cultivate a new client base.
Right. Well, sometimes bad accident can lead you to something better, and it pushes you forward, even if you're reluctant to do something. So that happened to you, thanks to the pipe burst. Right. Since you started to focus on individual clients, you began working on the very famous architect, Kiyoshi Takeyama. He's very famous. So how did you manage to work with him back then when you are yet to become the famed Benie Mukayu now?
The first opening above, Komorebi no Yu, was made by a local construction company. But I already knew I wanted to collaborate with an architect that could understand what I had in my mind, help me drawing a vision of the future ryokan and give it a shape in reality. In the early 90s, I read many architecture magazines and I thought that Takeyama-san's design was the best for ryokan I envisioned. When I saw a picture of a ryokan in Hakone designed by Takeyama-san, I immediately felt a strong sympathy and thought, this is it. So I went to Hakone with my husband Kazunari to see it with my own eyes. I was so impressed by the rhythm of the architecture and the design. The architecture seemed to invite the nature to pour inside. I strongly believe that Takeyama-san was the architect I was looking for. But as you said back then, my husband Kazunari and I were still the owners of an unknown low-level ryokan with a very limited budget. And it seemed nearly impossible that Takeyama-san would accept working with us. But we felt we had to try anyway, So when we were still on our way back home from Hakone, we called Takeyama-san's office Amorph Architect Studio, and we could make an appointment at a ryokan without saying the details or the budget. We really wanted Takeyama-san to come and see the possibility in our land with his own eyes. Then Takeyama-san and Enomoto-san from Amorph Studio eventually visited the ryokan in October 1994. We asked them to build a vessel, which means a villa, a simple, beautiful Japanese-style architecture in the nature. Takeyama-san and Enomoto-san fell in love with the forest garden and our vision. Then they agreed to work with us. Back then, we were all very young. We shared the same energy and passion. We were all just so excited about the idea of creating our villa in the beautiful forest. A few days after our meeting, I wrote a poem titled Beginning and posted it to Amorph Studio. Enomoto-san replied, "Amorph Studio has been open for 15 years, and this is the first time that a client writes an original poem and sends it to us. We promise we'll do our best." Then Takeyama-san started drawing the master plan. He designed freely, guided by his first inspirations. 1 month later, he had already completed the master plan of our ideal villa. This master plan made our vision clear and gave it a shape. Takeyama-san and Amorph Studio played such an important role for the future development of Menya Mukayu. Unfortunately, though, the budget of the master plan was incredibly expensive. We had to decide to proceed little by little. So we started from the lobby and 4 new guest rooms in 1996. Since then, Menya Mukayu has undergone several major renovations. In 1998, we built an annex with 6 new rooms and changed the name from Komorebi no Yu Menya to Menya Mukayu. In 2001, we created a library. It was not very common to have a library at a ryokan, and 6 more new Zen-style rooms. In 2006, we completed the foreign restaurant, the Super NTA, and Wakamurasaki Suite. Lastly, in 2018, we designed a new seat room called Byakuroku. You see, the collaboration with Takeyama-san and Amorph Studio started almost 30 years ago, and as you can see, it's still ongoing.
Amazing. I'm thinking, what if you didn't send the poem to Takeyama-san and his office? maybe Mukayu didn't exist today. So must be really impressive. Do you still have the poem?
Sometimes. that poem? I don't have yes, I have. I have the big file about the first meeting, and I have it in my file.
I hope one day you're going to publish it. Maybe. So, but now you have 16 rooms in total, less than a third of the original number of the rooms. So, and each room has a personal onsen facility at the Benyamukayu, and you can enjoy the beautiful view of the surrounding nature. So, what is the concept of Mukayu now?
Correct. All the 16 rooms have their own private outdoor hot spring baths, from which guests can embrace the nature. The concept of Mukayu is richness in emptiness, inspired by Zen philosophy. It was born from the vision of a vessel, a villa which we see as a perfect place for feeling part of the nature. Everything here reflects the way in which we Japanese accept and appreciate the brevity of life. The flowers inside the ryokan are the same wild flowers that one can see in our forest garden. The furniture is very simple. The rooms are like empty vessels featuring only shoji paper screens, tatami mats and clay walls. The windows of every room are opened wide onto the garden, allowing light and shadow to pour in. The wooden private baths are always filled to the brim with hot water, reflecting the trees in the garden as in a mirror. Our guests often have very busy lives. For them, Benyamukayu is the right place to escape from the routine and release the body and mind from daily life. The time the guests spend at Benyamukayu remains as empty space in a busy schedule book. I think it's a time filled with freedom because it's empty, and it's a time for feeling richness in emptiness.
Richness in emptiness. So you said the brevity of life earlier in this section, and I think Japanese people often think of that brevity. Everything's so elusive sometimes, like cherry blossoms, it only lasts for a couple of weeks, which is beautiful rather than having them forever. So if you are too busy, you can't capture the moment of that brevity. Like, you can't have time to pay attention to changing seasons and all those very subtle but important moments of nature and life. That's really I think the essence of Japanese culture too. So it sounds like if you go to Mukayu, you can have the richness of emptiness, which means that you can not miss anything important in your life, getting away from crazy, busy, destructive modern life. So I haven't been there, but hopefully one day I get a chance to clean up my mind and stay empty.
You need that.
Yeah, I do. All right, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll discuss the essence of Japanese austerity called omotenashi that you can find at Benyamukayu. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Cultivating environmentally sound, economically viable, and community-focused farms and food systems. PASA Sustainable Agriculture's annual conference is one of the largest gatherings of sustainable farmers, food system professionals, and changemakers in the nation. The 2021 virtual conference takes place January 19th to February 5th and features more than 90 sessions on topics that include soil health, climate change, crop production, livestock grazing, urban agriculture, community building, food justice, and much, much more. Don't miss keynote speaker Robin Wall Kimmerer, scientist and author of Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants. Learn more about PASA Sustainable Agriculture's 2021 virtual conference and register online at pasafarming.org/conference.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Sachiko Nakamichi, the co-owner of Beniya Mukayu in Kaga City, Ishikawa Prefecture. So now, let's see. Well, let's talk about the food, which is, this is Japanese, so we should do that. So you have a beautiful restaurant at Mukayu, Beniya Mukayu, called Kaiseki Horin. So what is the concept of Horin?
Okay. And normally, when staying at a ryokan, dinner and breakfast are served in the rooms. However, at Beniya Mukayu, we have a restaurant called Kaiseki Horin. In my opinion, having the meals at the restaurant enhances the whole experience because the guests can appreciate the food better. They can easily interact with Kosuke, the restaurant manager, and the sommelier. Sometimes the guests can also meet our chef, Kaku-san. Years ago, I wrote a short text to introduce the Horin to our guests. It reads, we honestly deal with the seasonal ingredients that have been cultivated and sourced by our suppliers. We spare no effort and we work wholeheartedly with our best wisdom to maximize their freshness and the beauty of their flavor. We will deliver the seasonal taste of Japan. This is the concept of Kaiseki Horin.
That sounds fantastic. So, what types of food do you offer at the Kaiseki Horin?
We offer Kaga Kaiseki dinners and traditional breakfast. The ingredients are always seasonal, local, and fresh. The way to cook and present them is simple, because we want our guests to taste their natural flavors. We serve the food on beautiful local Kutani porcelain and Yamanaka or Wajima lacquerware, and each vessel is chosen to enhance the content. We have curated selection of sake and signature wines to match the food as well. In the morning, our breakfast consists of rice cooked in earthen pots, miso soup, tofu, umeboshi pickles, dashimaki tamago, Japanese omelette. Breakfast that is definitely unique, but we also serve a Western-style breakfast to those guests who prefer a lighter one.
Right. Well, Japanese breakfast is really something you should experience in Japan. And yeah, it sounds amazing. So can you tell us about your suppliers that you mentioned earlier?
Our region, Kaga, is quite special because the mountain is very close to the sea. So we get the best from both the land and the sea. Fish, rice, vegetables. So we have a lot of suppliers and a very close relationship with each of them. Because we live in the same area since our childhood, we know exactly what is the best season for each local product. We also know how the weather conditions affect the supply. If it is very cold and rainy, we know how hard it is to fish. That is why at Kaiseki Horin, we feel the responsibility to maximize the freshness and the beauty of the products we get from our suppliers. In addition, we are committed to use more fish that is sourced sustainably. As a member of Lure Shuttle, we took part in a project called Fish Unknown, where we propose recipes using varieties of fishes that are tasty but normally not used in high-end restaurants. We made a new menu, Shimad Umazura. Umazura means horse face. It is a kind of kawahagi fried fish, and in the future, we will propose more unknown but tasty local treasures like that.
Right, it's very local and sustainable. So let's talk about austerity. That's called omotenashi in Japanese. So Mukayu was awarded the Welcome Trophy by Lule Chateau for its outstanding level of service in 2013. So what is the philosophy of austerity at Beniya Mukayu?
Yes, it was just such a great honor for us to be awarded the Welcome Trophy of Lule Chateau. Lule Chateau is not a chain of hotels. It's an association where all the members share a vision based on a strong family spirit. The owners, the staff members, and even the guests are all part of the Lule Chateau family. Of course, each hotel has got its own unique way to treat the guests. For us, the most important thing is to make them happy when they stay at Beniya Mukayu. In my opinion, they come here to have a happy time rather than just for facilities or for the food. I think the key is whether we are able to treat our guests as a member of the Mukayu family as well as of the Lule Chateau family instead of treating them just as customers.
Right. And I think you can actually feel, especially places like Beniya Mukayu, it's a small scale and you don't want to feel isolated because your focus is yourself being empty. So you just want to be comfortably accommodated. So it sounds like that's a kind of not pushy service, but a very indirect, welcoming feeling that you are accommodated without any sales attempt. So that's kind of like style of Japanese omotenashi, and it sounds like you're offering it. So could you give us an example of how you practice the Mukayu style hospitality?
The ryokan has been owned and run by our family for almost 100 years. Katsudari and I are the third generation owners now. Many staff members have been working with us for a very long time. Our motto is family spirit. My husband Kazunari is a tea master of Urasenke. He welcomes the guest himself with a dedicated tea ceremony, wearing a kimono every day. As for me, every day I take care of Shitsurae, which means the setting of the property in harmony with Japanese sensitivity towards nature. I also greet the guests personally before dinner, offer them yoga classes every morning before breakfast, and say farewell when they check out. Our two sons are also working with us. Daisuke is the shop manager, and Kosuke is the restaurant manager. One day they will be the fourth generation owners of Beniya Mukayu. And our staff. Our chef Kaku-san has been working with us for more than 15 years. At the front desk, Oyama-san, Ujimori-san, and Nakagawa-san have been with us also more than 15 years.
Wow.
And the spa manager Nishino-san as well. They all remember our regular guests and their preferences very well. So our guests can always find someone familiar, someone that they can trust. I think that is special because it makes the guests feel at home and in a way also safe. And what really makes the difference is how we take care of our guests during their stay. Let me give you an example. If the guest watches the flowers very closely, well, here is an opportunity to engage with them. Find out how they feel about the flowers. Tell them what kind of flowers they are. What is special about them? This makes the guests happy, and it can be done with anything, food, sake, objects, local traditions. The key is whether we are able to build a relationship, I think. We also feel that it is our responsibility to present local products, crafts, and traditions so people can see them in a fresh way. Guests can enjoy some of Mukayu's unique experiences in Yamashiro Onsen or nearby. Then, like kamisuki paper or soba making experience, or a visit to a local tea roasting factory, or a workshop at a Kutani porcelain kiln, and so on. In this way, we connect our guests to local people.
Right. Yeah, that's the example of that, you know, guest watching the flower. But then I think the key is to observe who you are dealing with, because we tend to say something without thinking too much about the other people or the other person you are talking with. But by observing it, you can really deeply understand somebody's feelings and what they like. So I learned a lesson. I should observe people more to practice my own hospitality in my own life. So the concept of mukayu must be your own ideal space. So how did you develop the vision of the perfect space to stay? Because as far as I heard, you're very visionary. So did you personally had it when you joined the hotel business, or you gradually developed it over the course of transforming the hotel?
I think it's rooted in my childhood. When I was a child, I loved to go to my grandparents' home to spend the four summer holidays with them. They lived in the countryside, about 1 hour by train from my home in Kanazawa. My memories are still very clear. I remember the rice fields, the vegetable gardens, the shrine. I used to go to the shrine every day and played with the other kids. We would catch cicadas and fireflies and put them in little baskets or glass jars to observe them. I was especially attracted by fireflies. Their small and weak light gave me delicate emotion, thinking of their ephemeral life. In the mornings, I would go and handpick cucumbers and tomatoes for breakfast. I remember the smell very well. And we would put watermelons in the stream beside the house to get cool before eating them. But the best was reading my favorite books in our veranda in the afternoon under Komorebi. So when Takeyama-san designed the first four rooms, I asked him to place engawa veranda between the room and the forest garden. He realized some beautiful ones much beyond my expectations. They are the most relaxing place for our guests. Another example is Wakamurasaki Sweet Room. When I was little, in front of my house in Kanazawa, there used to be a school lined with sakura trees. At the end of the sakura blooming, it's only a few days in a year, the petals were fluttering into my house. I felt like I was into another world. Due to the renovation of my house, the scenery was lost when I was a child, yet I clearly remembered the scene and kept it in my mind for many years. Then, in 2006, I shared this memory with Takeyama-san, and that became the concept of Wakamurasaki Suite, which is located right in front of a mountain sakura tree that is more than 100 years old. So when it comes to sakura season, when guests walk into Wakamurasaki Suite, our staff opens the glass sliding door. Then the petals gently flutter inside the room, like in my memory. So yes, somehow Benya Mukayu recreates some ephemeral and beautiful moments of my childhood.
Wow. So it is a place to stay, but guests are going to your memories, which is very unique. So the classic Japanese-style hotel is called ryokan. What is the difference between hotel and ryokan?
From the guest point of view, there are some differences between hotels and ryokans. For example, the architecture in ryokans is mainly traditional Japanese style. Prices are always half board, include dinner and breakfast. The food at ryokans is usually preset. Basically, the chef offers you the best seasonal and local food available on that day. But in my opinion, the biggest difference between hotels and ryokans is that ryokans represent the Japanese culture and the Japanese mindset, which are unique. Because Japan has closed the country for a long time, Japanese culture of lifestyle was developed with a few influences from abroad. Unfortunately, this variable culture has almost disappeared in modern normal life in the cities because people's lifestyle has changed. For example, when you look at the pictures on today's architecture magazines, you will see very nice flooring, but no tatami or bamboo floor. You will see doors, but no shoji paper screens or clay wall. You seldom see traditional materials that are breathing. By this, I mean which are natural and age with time. Modern architecture is convenient, which is all good, but it hasn't a strong Japanese identity. People are likely to forget the gentle touch of tatami, bamboo, clay, or wood. Also, the gentle quality of the light filtering into the room through shoji paper screens. However, so many things at ryokan still reflect the traditional Japanese lifestyle that seems to be lost elsewhere. In many ways, ryokan represent the best of Japanese culture and aesthetics. I'm sure staying at a ryokan is the best way to experience the real Japan.
100% I agree. Yeah.
<Thank you.
laughs> Right. Well, you said, you know, the materials that ages over time. And it's just the word wabi-sabi. It's a very specific Japanese aesthetics that aging things are beautiful rather than having always shiny new things. We accept how beautiful they are. And I think it's just too, it may be a too much of an extension, but in Japan, elder people are not treated as nothing. That's what, relatively speaking, they're well more respected than a lot of other cultures. So, yeah, it's appreciating old things. And if you smell, you know, the tatami mat, which is very traditional, there's something healing about it. And your time stops within that tradition. So, yeah, listeners, if you're interested in going to Japan after the pandemic soothes, ryokan is one of the greatest places to enjoy the essence of Japanese culture. So, anyway, so do you call mukayu ryokan or hotel?
Thank you for your question, Akiko-san. We are proud to be a ryokan. We are also part of the association, the Ryokan Collection. The spirit of Mukayu's hospitality, omotenashi, is based on Japanese sensitivity towards nature. Guests are encouraged to tune into the rhythm of nature. I think that we offer many keys to the guests to access Japanese aesthetics and mindset. The architecture, the forest garden, the rooms, the hot spring onsen, the tea ceremony, and the food, of course. Normally, the guests are very relaxed and quiet. They wear yukata. They really take the time to enjoy the bath, the atmosphere, the food, and the service, and so on.
Okay, so let's see. So we're running out of time a little bit. So what are your plans for the future?
Last year, Takema-san sent a postcard with a message. So what's next? 次の日程は? He knows me very well. So he knows that I still have some plans for the future. This year, we are planning to put a structure covered with plants to surround the outside of the property. That will bring our guests closer to nature. The beauty of the four seasons and the appreciation of the changing cornerstones of Japanese culture and Mukayu's omotenashi hospitality. After COVID-19, we feel that luxury is no longer enough for traveling. Since we stopped traveling, I think we all become more aware of what is precious about it. People want to experience the warmth and emotions of real human interaction. People want to explore what is real Japan, not only the surface, but also dig deep into the culture. The roots of Japanese culture and mindset arise from Shintoism and Zen Buddhism. In Shintoism, there are many gods in any form of natural things. We say 8 million gods, Yao Yorozu no Kami. The feeling of being blessed by a lot of gods when we are in the beauty of nature makes us happy. In Zen Buddhism, we are nothing more than just a part of nature, and our lives are very brief. By accepting this, we make our mind calm and peaceful. So we will offer many more keys to the guest to access Japanese mindset. Starting from the shitsurae, the setting of the property in harmony with nature, which can bring along calmness, happiness, and peacefulness. At Benya Mukayu, we all hope that during their stay with us, our guests will be healed and rejuvenated in both physical and spiritual way.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned a very important thing that, you know, Shintoism and Zen Buddhism, they are about gratitude toward nature, and Buddhism accepting everything, not pretending you are better or anything, you accept everything, that's who you are. That makes you really in peace, and especially in this COVID situation, these are very important. So this is my final question. So where can we find more information and updates about the Mukayu?
You can go to our website, mukayu.com, and you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, so it's Mukayu is mukayu.com, mukayu.com, Mukayu. So listeners, I really suggest that you visit the website and just watch beautiful pictures and you feel like visiting there. So thank you so much for joining us today, Sachiko.
Thank you very much, Akiko-san.
You are excellent. So looking forward to another new visions to be proven to dream comes true. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for short topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Aman Wang, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, Hood Radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.